7:14, it's National Tattoo Day. I'm asking you to text me at 504-260-1870. If you have any tattoos, and if so, what are they? If you ever wanted to get one, what would it be? I've thought about it before, but I don't know that I've ever been that committed to anything that permanent that I wanted on my body that I felt that passionate about that I would want it there years from now. You know, I mean, some people, boy, they're painted up like I'm not judging here. It's different than it used to be, but some people are painted up like a canvas. Cynthia Lee Shang joins us now, president of Jefferson Parish. Happy Tattoo Day, Madam President. How are you?
Oh, is it Tattoo Day? Okay.
National Tattoo Day. Yeah, I'm guessing you don't have any tattoos, do you?
No, I really don't. Yeah. But if I did, I don't know if I would tell you.
Yeah,
but
that's the other thought. That's the other thing as well. But, you know, I'm not going to ask about your children because I respect your privacy. But Dave Cohen and I were talking. They do have?
My son has a very big one on his leg. Yeah.
How did mom feel about that?
Mom couldn't stop that one from happening. So,
no, mom can't, you know. And neither can dad or mom or anybody else. And
yeah.
I'm just saying that's something that we parents go through where, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's great. That's just.
Yeah, that's exactly my expression.
That's nice.
Yeah, great.
Because there's nothing you can do, right? I mean, because they're grown-ups and it's permanent.
It's
done.
It's done. Yeah.
Right, it's done.
You didn't use my money to do it, so.
Yeah, and every time you see him, it's like, is that a new one? No? No? The same one I've had. Okay. Do you ask, is that a new one or not? Tell the truth. Have you ever asked?
That's funny. If it was a new one?
Yeah.
No, he got it. I think he got it like a year or two ago.
No, but every time you see it, sometimes I'll say,
No,
it's not a new one. It's the same one. Oh, okay. But I think I make my point. Anyway, it's a different thing. It's a generational thing. Let's talk about Jefferson Parish and the rain event. And look, we should all be thankful that it's not worse than it is. I want to ask you about the importance as a leader. And, you know, I respect you as a leader. How important is it that you can have a kind of like practice exercise when it comes to one of these things?
I mean, if this ends up not being something terrible for us, I will say I'm grateful for this exercise because and I kind of, you know, have said that in different interviews, like we would be okay if we had a small event to just kind of, you know, there's changes at the national level. There's certainly changes at the state level as well, with some rearranging of departments and processes. And so I think, you know, hopefully we get through the next couple days okay. And this, you know, we partially activated our emergency operations center. So it's good to get, you know, kind of a small one under our belt. And hopefully this is something that ends up being a non-event for us.
So what is the timeline that you're concerned with now? What are you hearing from the weather people?
So going into this, they kept saying it's the worst event, the worst time, you know, was a Thursday, Friday kind of situation. So we'll see what happens. It's really, you know, this event, what they were telling us was not a high wind event, not a coastal flooding event. It was just heavy rains. And so we know those are can be treacherous for us. I mean, if a rain band sets up on top of you for any length of time where our pumping capacity can't keep up, then we're going to have major street flooding and road closures, and then even worse, maybe structural flooding. So that's the situation we want to avoid. So that's where we are. We're just hoping that it moves through. If it does rain, that it moves through quickly and we can keep up the pumping capacity like what we saw last night. We only ended up getting about half an inch, I think, is what I saw this morning. So that's what we want. We want it to move through quickly and where our pumping can keep up. But it's always dangerous. Look, I told my team in all of our meetings, when we have a rain event and a flooding event, I mean, everybody has Texas on their mind. Our land is not that way. We're not structured that way. But we have something else. We have open canals where we put vehicular lanes of traffic directly next to our open canals, which is a deadly situation. If the road floods and the canals top so much that you just see one surface of water on the top. I've been in a car where it doesn't take much to lose control of a car. You know, if you have a car that's low to the ground, it really doesn't take much water before you've lost complete control of the car. And that situation next to an open canal is very, very dangerous. So that is the dangerous situation in Jefferson Parish for us, especially on the East Bank more so, I would say, for flooded streets. And so we certainly, you know, have a plan for that with many of our teams having eyes on all the major canals. So that was, to me, coming into this event, probably the most dangerous situation for us.
I know you're not very concerned
about being
that.
Not being in a building that's not, you know, we weren't calling for people in trailers to come to shelters. It's not that kind of a situation. So you have to look at all of these events and look at the hazards they present and kind of respond accordingly.
So when it comes to FEMA as a parish president, do you know where FEMA stands now heading into the rest of hurricane season or what the situation is?
So, look, there's changes. The FEMA, they have a review council that was here with us last week. I was able to speak to them looking at changes for FEMA in the future. And I think there's a lot of really good. I just came back from a conference a couple days ago where I'm on the National Association of Counties. I'm one of the national chairs with my other chairperson, Commissioner Garcia from Houston, and talking about what we need. What does recovery look like in a new process? What does mitigation look like in a new process? I'll tell you, our NACO committee got together at the end of last fall, not realizing this was going to really be a front burner issue and be part of a national conversation. And that's what an incredible time for me to be in office to where, or people like us, and we have people around the country who have been through disasters, who have been through all kinds, a lot of wildfires, all kinds of disasters, and actually get to be a part of a conversation of what a new redesign FEMA would look like. I feel very fortunate to have stayed in office long enough to have seen the disasters, but also be part of what a better solution looks like. I really am grateful for this time and that I'm able to be part of these committees. So a lot of it is maybe decentralizing the work. I mean, the more, I'm a student of government too, the more layers of government you have, the longer it's going to take, the more it can fall through the cracks. So I think there's a large discussion on how do we decentralize this? How do we get the money to the community faster? How do we let communities handle it themselves, but have a good audit trail so we, the national public knows their money is being spent in the best interest? All of these conversations are going on, and certainly for me at the local level, I want to make sure there's a local voice to this, but emergency management and disaster response, it really takes all levels of government to have some role, but what we need to define those roles at each level and in each department, so...
It's interesting to hear you say that because, FEMA didn't have a great reputation when it came to response after disasters. No disrespect to anybody in terms of efficiency. But then when they talk about getting rid of it, everybody panics. And they're not talking about getting rid of federal aid, as I understand it. They're talking about getting rid of the organization. And instead, as you talk about audit trail, and I know you're an accountant by education and training, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. When it comes to audit trail, so what they're proposing is instead, and I think you would be in favor of this, handing the money over to local officials so they can make it, spend it more efficiently, more quickly in a way to help more people, however, be responsible for it. That's what you're saying?
Exactly. They're really discussing on getting it down to the states. And then I would, if it gets to that, I would ask the state if we have locals have capacity to handle it. And in Jefferson, we do have a strong emergency management team, a strong financial team that's used to handling disasters. Let me take that money and do the projects ourselves in Jefferson, right? And then the state capacity, because once a storm hits, or a major storm likely for us, but a major disaster happens in a state, they can easily not have the capacity to handle it. There are a lot of smaller parishes that, they're smaller. They don't have such a breadth of team on staff. Mm-hmm. And the state resources could really, help those parishes. But I think in Jefferson, I think I can get it done very efficiently, with our team, the projects. And I would venture to say cheaper for a lot of reasons. So, if God forbid there's a disaster happening our way, I'm going to be asking for the pilot project. Give us a shot at it. And I bet you I can bring this over the finish line in a cheaper way, in a more efficient way. Because, that's what I said, bringing it to the people, I get our constituents here see me in the grocery store. They see me in the gym. I need to deliver. We've been through a disaster. I'm going to make sure it happens in the best way, and I'm going to be working it every day versus you put it in the hands of someone. And I was also this person. You put it in the hands of someone who's in D.C., who goes to work in a D.C. office, and you give them a set of rules to have to follow, and they're going to check every single box. And let me tell you, there are a lot of boxes they have to check. They're further away from the disaster. They don't know. They haven't seen the worst of it. And they're really, you know, for lack of a better word, just checking boxes and make sure we're abiding by every rules. And every box that we don't check, that's an email that they have to send, and you know, months. And, you know, these projects end up stringing out to years. And so it's just a more efficient way for disaster response. I likened it when I spoke at the committee last week. I say, you know, if you're going to have surgery and you're going to have surgery in 2 weeks now, Tommy, right? Your medical team is going to be speaking a lot. You're going to be talking to your insurance. You're going to be doing pretests. There's a protocol for that. But if you have a life-threatening crisis, you're going to go into an emergency room, and they're not going to be checking the boxes for the rules. It's going to be a singular mission to stabilize you, keep you alive. And that's the way disaster response needs to be treated, like the person in the emergency room, right? That kind of level of singular mission, not all of this rule book throwing at you. But look, you know, certain rules have to be in place. But we do have, you know, in a rebuilding, let's say we're rebuilding, every day we have permitting rules. We have procurement rules that protect the taxpayer at the state level, local level, and national level. We abide by these rules anyway. So that was sort of my plea, is like, we have these rules that we abide by every day. We have to abide by the clean, you know, the air and water and all these, you know, environmental rules. Give it to us, punish us if we don't do it right, threaten to take the money back if we don't do it right. That scares somebody like me. You're going to take the money back, and now I have to find other money to finish this project. It's frightening to somebody like me. And so that was really my plea in front of the FEMA Review Council and, you know, in the conversations at our conferences.
I love your passion when it comes to efficiency and leadership. I really do. You said people see you at the gym. What are you bench pressing now? 350, 400?
No.
What club are you in now?
No. I do the machines, but now I'm more doing the classes. I think I enjoy the classes more.
Wouldn't you love
so.
To see a buff Cynthia Lee Sheng? Wouldn't you love to see her just
no, that's
ripped
not
with
happening.
Muscles just looking like, you know, bench pressing 500 pounds? Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Pleasure
Thank
as always.
You,
Sorry. Cynthia Lee Sheng, President of Jefferson Parish, 727 traffic now, WWL. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. You might have seen him on the news last night. How you doing, Colin?
Good. How are you, Tommy? Good morning.
I'm all right. So tell me what's going on with the City of New Orleans and this weather event and where we stand now.
Well, where we stand this morning is a little bit better. We've gotten some indication from National Weather Service that it's backed off a little bit on the whole tropical development side. You know, at one point we were looking at a 40 to 50% chance of development. Now it's down to 30. You know, I think the headline is what we saw last night. We're probably going to see a couple more times early Saturday morning. So a lot of lightning, light show kind of moving over the area, some times of some moderate to heavy rainfall. And obviously we're going to keep looking at that. And we use this as an opportunity to kind of get the public, you know, charged up and ready to go for the high to hurricane season. And I hope people take that seriously. We're really encouraging people to sign up for the NOLA Ready text alerts because, you know, and as I mentioned yesterday in the mayor's press conference that, you know, the worst thing that the thing that keeps me up and bothers me the most is the idea that, you know, we can't get messages out to the public and, you know, we see things that have occurred around the country. And, you know, in particular, I think a lot about Texas over this past couple of weeks that, you know, being able to reach out and send a message quickly to the public is something that, you know, we value really greatly and use this as an opportunity to sign up for those alerts and kind of pay attention to the weather. And just, you know, be safe and we'll get through this on Saturday. And then, you know, this kind of leads to the better habits that we want people to have when it is a larger storm. And we are looking at something that is defined and either a tropical storm or something greater, you know, and because they will come in the future. And this is an opportunity to kind of dust off the cobwebs from last year with your preparedness, start, you know, gathering supplies, getting kits together and having that ready to go. So that at a moment's notice, if you need it, it's there for you.
The other thing about the NOLA Ready alerts tell you when you can neutral ground park and when you can't. And as it stands now,
that's right.
You can still tell me what the deal is with neutral ground parking, Colin.
Yeah, we're not going to change that. We enacted the ability to park on the neutral grounds in the city last night starting at 7 p.m. and we're going to go all the way to Sunday at 7 p.m. and that just gives people an ample amount of time obviously we're expecting this weather through Saturday, but gives them ample amount of time to move those cars off of the neutral ground. We just ask that people use caution when they do that and try and preserve the neutral grounds as much as possible. We're lucky to have, a lot of manicured, beautiful neutral grounds in the city. And we do this because we're trying to, keep people safe and trying to protect property to a certain extent. It's totally true. And we just ask also that you don't block someone's driveway when you're doing this, that you don't block intersections and streetcar tracks and sidewalks, and the like. But use that as a tool to protect yourself and your property.
So for the most part, do people play nice when it comes to neutral ground parking? And what would you like to remind them of again as it relates to this courtesy that's being extended to them?
Yeah, for the most part, in my experience, people play nice. I mean, there's no issues with it. It's something that has become part of kind of our story and what we do here when we prepare for these things. Because, look, for some people, the car is obviously for everyone. The car is a certain amount of a lifeline, but this is the car that gets you to work. It's the car that gets your kids to school and home. And so it's an important investment that people make in their lives. And we want to make sure that we can prevent as much as we can. Something as simple as street flooding, which, 4 or 5 inches of water in a street can start getting into cars and be a huge problem. And so that's why we do it. But I am reminded by my fellow directors in public works and in parks and parkways that, when it happens, there is a certain amount of damage that occurs from people driving on the neutral grounds. And so I always at least try and say, just be careful. There's a lot of tree roots in there. It can damage those oak trees. It can damage the grass and the landscaping that has been done on those. And then that does incur an additional cost to the city to repair that work. And, part of the reason why we also extend it out is hopefully it'll allow the ground to dry a little bit before people start getting up there and tearing ruts in the neutral grounds, quite frankly, is what happens.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring that up, Colin. It's like nobody wants it to look like garbage. And if you break it, if you mess it up, it's going to cost money to fix it. So just don't be a jerk. Just take it easy when the ground's wet. Don't tear the grass up. Look at it as if it's your yard. That's all.
We'll take a break.
Pick it up. We get back. 7:50, 10 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 7:54, call it 7:55, 5 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the city of New Orleans about neutral ground parking, and somebody texted in and wants to know, how do you define a neutral ground, and are parks considered neutral grounds, example, Coliseum Square?
Well, neutral ground is a median between streets, and really what it is, it's a great question. I would say the definition is anywhere along the city's right-of-way that is higher than the street. But again, I would caution that streetcar tracks, intersections, someone else's driveway, a sidewalk, that's not appropriate. I think what we traditionally think of as the neutral ground is the area near your home that is between streets that has a large, grass area that you can pull up onto.
So,
and certainly, I would say parks would be a little bit more of a dicey situation, and then also private property is off limits.
So when it comes to the rain that you're, or whatever weather you're anticipating, what do you want the people of Orleans Parish to know and do for the next couple of days, Colin, or give me a time frame on it?
Yeah, I think that the flood advisory lasts until 1 a.m. on Saturday morning. I think that, probably around 7 a.m. Saturday, we'll have a better idea that this will be pretty much cleared up. I do see that there is some indication that this may kind of swirl up and go a little bit north of us. I shouldn't say swirl up. It will move north of us and create some rain in central North Louisiana. You know, I think what we saw last night, which was about a half an inch to an inch of rainfall total throughout the day and night, is something that we'll be looking at potentially a few more rounds of that. The Weather Service has backed off to saying between now and Saturday, probably about 2 to 4 inches is what we'd be looking at. I'm tending to think, at least based on this current forecast, it's going to be on the lower end of that, that we may get another inch to 2 inches of rain between now and Saturday, which is manageable, in my opinion. It's all about, and as you know, it's all about how quickly we get a large amount of rain. If we get 3 inches in an hour, we're going to have some street flooding because, you know, the old adage, an inch an hour and then a half inch each additional hour with Sewage and Water Board, is pretty much true. They can handle a certain amount, but at some point it becomes, you know, too great for any system to handle. And so they look pretty good with their power and pumping supply that they have right now. And again, there were no issues last night. Overnight, we were watching very closely. I think that for the public, what I would say is, I appreciate everyone taking this seriously. You know, we've looked at some of the flooding that occurred in Texas and just the other day in New York and New Jersey, and we just realized that, you know, these types of events are real, and the types of alerts that come out, we want to make sure are communicated. We don't want people to overreact, but we also don't want people to underreact or to ignore it. And so we're going to take every opportunity to try and use these types of systems as an opportunity to make sure people are getting ready, that they have their plan, and that they're staying communicating with us. And the best way to do that, and I'll promote it again, is by texting NOLA Ready, one word, NOLA Ready, to 77295. It will take you, you know, less than a minute to do, and you'll get an automatic confirmation that you're signed up for the alerts. And then every time we get these, you know, major watch and warning type alerts from the Weather Service, we amplify those. And then we also add in our own messaging about, you know, neutral ground parking restrictions and, you know, whether or not city services are going to be impacted. You know, today we're doing remote work, so you can get all your city services done online if you, you know, take advantage of that. And then we'll evaluate for tomorrow. And the reason we do that is because we want to make sure that we're practicing what we preach as far as, you know, why would we be bringing people into work when we're trying to encourage people to, you know, use caution when they're driving around in weather like this. And it looks pretty good right now as far as no rain, but that could change, you know, very quickly.
Give me the number, Colin, that people can text and get that the alerts about the parking.
Yeah, absolutely. It's texting the word NOLA Ready. Type it into your text function on your smart device. NOLA Ready with no space to 77295.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you hopefully soon, but not about hurricanes. And maybe it'll be a quiet
season.
That's
right, Thomas.
There you go. All right. Colin Arnold, thank you. We're going to take a break and back. We'll talk to Dr. B. Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, about heat illnesses. Stay tuned, WWL.